Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Jonathan Price, and it's not very often that I actually get to grace Navigating Life with Vision Loss audience members. It's nice to be on here. But the reason actually I'm on here is because we wanted to bring back an episode with Kim Wardlow and Kim Owens, who did a wonderful interview talking about schooling and the education system and how to advocate for yourself when it comes to education for your child in the blind and low vision community. Before we get into that, though, I want to say a massive thank you to all of you who came out and supported us at the Shine Festival. It was an absolutely incredible weekend. Artists from all over the country came and shared their music, their talents, their art, their jewelry, their painting, you name it, and we had it out there. It was phenomenal. We did a live recording of The Blind Chick, and it was so much fun. And to get to see you guys out there, it was fun because I kept hearing voices that I was like, I know this voice. I know who this is, but where am I? And then, you know, it finally clicked. Oh, we had this person on, or we had you on a little while ago. It was just wonderful to be able to see you guys and meet you guys and interact with you guys in a way that I never have before. And so that was really special for me. So thank you guys so much for being a part of what makes this community special. You know, we're always talking about making this community a little bit smaller, and events like this is exactly how we do that. So again, thank you so much for supporting us as AfterSight, all of our shows from The Blind Chick to Blind Level Tech, Game Changers, Blind Sight, and the show that you're listening to now, Navigating Life with Vision Loss. All right, that's enough of me chatting. Kim, introduce us to our guest.
This week, I have Kim Owens with me. She is the wife and mother of two sons, one of whom is blind, and she helps to support parents of blind children with her blog, being an advocate, mentor, author, speaker, and a certified Braille transcriber. So one of her many passions is supporting parents of blind children who are navigating the public education system. So we'll definitely be touching on that. Kim, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited for this program. Before we dive into our main topic, I always like to give folks a chance to tell our audience a little bit about yourself, or if you have an unusual hobby or interest apart from the obvious things that we'll be discussing today.
Let's see. I started Braille transcribing because I was concerned about my son's transition to college. I didn't know how much advocacy there would be. So that started off, you know, feeling like a need, but really is a hobby now. I love, you know, doing work around accessibility. And then also I have two animals that are laying right next to me right now, and they are my fur monsters, and I really enjoy time with them.
Great. Well, again, thank you for being on the program. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey with your son's vision loss and how that impacted you as a parent?
Sure. I have two sons, and my youngest at the time was about 8. His name's Kai, and literally overnight, it seemed like his personality changed. Everybody used to call him No Fear Kai because he would do anything my older son was doing, and they're 4.5 years apart. So everybody knew him as No Fear Kai, and he loved to skimboard, skateboard. He was just super active. And overnight, he became really anxious, did not want to leave my side, didn't want to go to school, didn't want to do homework, didn't want to hang with friends. And we really had no idea what was going on. So I would say in the beginning, everything was just a big mystery and really, really frightening.
I know in one of the articles that I read, I'm not sure if it was an exact quote, but it was a quote from you that said, at one point, you and your husband decided that you were not going to assign your fears about blindness to Kai. So he obviously had his fears, but then you also had your own fears as well as you went through this journey and got a diagnosis. And
yeah, it was really scary in the beginning because we didn't know what was going on. And it took a couple years and he was finally diagnosed with something called retinitis pigmentosa. But they kept saying that he had this abnormal, aggressive form of the disease. You know, in the beginning, the doctor said Kai had RP and that it was aggressive and, you know, different than what they typically see. And for 9 years, I asked every single doctor that we saw, could this be autoimmune? Because I have 3 autoimmune diseases, and they all said no. Well, it turns out after some genetic testing and some autoimmune testing, that he is the only recorded case of somebody having 4 mutations to their ABCA4 gene, which typically is a Stargardt's, but he has a different mutation. And that is combined with autoimmune retinopathy. So, you know, in the beginning, they said that he would lose his sight very slowly and probably retain his sight into middle age. But the reality is, I'm so grateful that we really pushed for his accommodations and his training because he lost his sight very quickly. He lost his central vision, sort of like Stargardt's. And then the autoimmune retinopathy stole his peripheral sight. So currently he has just one small spot of sight on his far left periphery. So we were just really confused and really scared, and we didn't know anybody that was blind. We live in a rural area outside of Savannah, Georgia. And, you know, in the beginning, we just didn't know what to do. So the only thing we could do is sort of let him lead. And it was interesting. Once he got the diagnosis and knew that he felt afraid because he could no longer see the way he used to see, it really calmed him down. It just having the words and the understanding of what was happening, he sort of went back to being himself. And the fear for him sort of went away, where my husband and I were just completely shocked and had no idea what to do. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we didn't know anyone who was blind. So we just started letting Kai lead and just supporting him in any way that we could as we worked with our own acceptance and building a community.
What in those early stages is there thinking about maybe other parents who are just starting that journey with their child? What was the most helpful to you? Because I think many people find themselves not knowing another blind person or not having access to obvious resources, at least resources they know about. What did you find most helpful in that early phase?
It was really hard in the beginning because we're in a rural area. There really wasn't any support around us. Not physically around us. So, you know, I got online, but that's sort of a scary place too. Ultimately, what helped us the most was for my son's teacher, the visually impaired, to connect us to mentors who are blind and, you know, to connect into parents groups online. But, you know, I really feel like in the beginning, the most important step for parents is acceptance. And it's really hard to accept something when you don't fully understand it. So, you know, educating ourselves about our children's diagnosis, the prognosis, the tools that are available, and then just really getting plugged into the community helps. Acceptance is just really difficult in the beginning. And I would say 90% of the parents who reach out to me are reaching out to me because they're having a really difficult time with acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that can take some time, and people deal with things differently too.
Sure. Yeah. And it comes and goes, you know, it's like you might accept one thing and then all of a sudden you're facing a new situation and you don't know how to handle it. And you sort of start through that whole process over again. So I always encourage parents to get connected to other families. And also if they're able to get therapy, talk therapy is really helpful. I also meditate. That really helped. That helped me to understand back to the fears that a lot of the fears I had about Kai's future were just simply fears. You know, it wasn't reality. The reality was happening in the day. And as long as I could tune into what was happening that day and follow Kai's lead, it really helped me to just calm my own fears.
Well, I know one of the things you faced day to day, and other parents do as well, is having Kai in the public schools and trying to communicate with the schools about his vision loss and his learning, and making sure that he was getting the resources from the school that he needed. And I know that's one of your big passions too, is helping parents with issues that they're having with their schools.
Yes, for sure. I honestly don't know if it's better to live in a big city, because in the big cities, you know, there are resources there, but there's also a lot more people using the resources.
Right.
In our area, what we were up against was constantly hearing from the school district that they'd never done this before. And it's like, well, you know what? Neither have I. And I'm not the expert here. So it was a challenge to understand what Kai needed long-term for accessibility, and then also making sure that, you know, the school district followed through with getting him the services he needed. And I think that's really hard for parents in the beginning, especially if their children have, like Kai had, a progressive sight loss disease. You know, the school districts will often say, well, they don't need that right now. And that is not an okay answer. I mean, the reality is children with progressive sight loss diagnosis have the right to accommodations and to services before their child needs them, so that by the time their child does need to transition to Braille or transition to using a white cane, they have those skills. It makes their transition so much easier than waiting until they need them, or waiting until they age out of the school district and, you know, IEPs are no longer a thing, you know. So I always encourage parents, if their school district's trying to do a 504 plan, which truly just is accommodations, I always push them to get an IEP. An IEP allows for services and training plus accommodations.
I think that is so important. I know we see that on the opposite end of the spectrum as we're dealing with older adults who are progressively from macular, other types of eye-related issues, losing their vision, and encouraging folks to look into services, look into travel training, all those things before they need it, because it will be easier to learn and adapt. And so I can see that would be the same.
Yes,
for
it's
a
so
child.
True.
Why wait?
Right, why wait? And I think that plays back into the acceptance thing. A lot of times parents, you know, the school districts are saying they don't need that yet. And as a parent, sometimes it's easier to think, oh, okay, we don't have to deal with that yet. But the reality is, the more we can prepare our children on the front end, the easier the transition to sight loss will be in the long term. And that proved true for us. And I've seen it, you know, prove true time and time again with other families.
There's the academic aspects of school, and then there's all the extracurricular activities and things like that. I know Kai is the only known blind person who's a sponsored skimboarder, and he skates and he surfs as being a drummer. And I think that's another thing that we've seen as we've worked with it within the community, of being afraid. You don't want your child, obviously, any parent could be overprotective, but I think especially when there's some other circumstance or factor that might make it seem more likely to have an injury, that it's easy for parents to become overprotective and not allow their children really to live their fullest. So could you speak to that a little bit? Were you ever worried, or since he'd been doing sports, he just carried on?
Yeah, it was interesting. Well, you know, when he went through that phase of being really afraid, he had sort of stopped doing everything. And then once mm-hmm. he realized that he was feeling so afraid because he was actually losing his sight, he was 10 at that time, and he just was determined that he was going to do everything he wanted to do. And, you know, that's hard because, yeah, as a mom, you know, I wanted to protect him a lot, but I just kept going back to that Mary Oliver poem, and I'm probably going to butcher it right now, but it basically, it ends with, you know, what are you going to do with this, with your one wild, what is it? Something wild and precious life, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I really just didn't want to stand in the way of Kai's life. You know, I wanted him to follow all of his passions and dreams. So anytime he had something he wanted to do, I would look at my older son and think, is that something I would have let Cash do at this age? And if the answer was yes, then I just sort of sucked it up and said, okay, we're going to figure this out. And so we would just make sure that he had the proper training, the proper accommodations, and we would just move forward with it. So when he wanted to learn to surf, we went to a surf camp for blind families. He'd been skimboarding for years since he was 3, and we could not imagine how he would skimboard. Do y'all know what skimboarding is?
I'm not terribly familiar with it. I just picked up a little bit about it from reading your blog, but yeah, might want to describe it for our listeners.
Yeah, I'll describe it for people who don't live near a beach. It's pretty popular where we are, but it's using a small board, sort of like a mini surfboard, but it doesn't have any fins on the bottom. And so prior to sight loss, Kai would throw that board, run after the board and jump on it and, you know, kind of skim the sand out onto the water. And, you know, he was young, so that's about all he could do. But as he started getting older, he really wanted to continue to do that, but couldn't figure out how to do it, you know, as a blind kid. And so we took him to a camp, and we worked with, and it wasn't for visually impaired kids. He was the only visually impaired kid there, but the coaches were willing to work with him, and they taught him a way to skimboard without letting go of his board. We didn't even know that was possible at the time. So he learned how to do that, and then he was able to continue, you know, skimboarding. So he started to progress. So he got a better board, not a little wooden board. He ended up with a carbon fiber board, and he would run, and it's called the monkey crawl. So instead of throwing the board in front of him, he would hold the board in 2 hands, sprint towards the water, and then kind of when he hits the water, kind of whip the board up under his feet and just keep going and just use the momentum to slide out. And once he got that down, he just continued progressing, and he eventually was offered a sponsorship through Exile Skimboards, and he competed against sighted competitors, and it just, he loved it. And I didn't want to stand in his way. That was something he really wanted to do.
Did you have any issues either with the schools or with other camps? It sounds like this camp was really open to working with him. But did you have any problems with coaches or anyone being hesitant to allow him to participate?
I think maybe we lucked out a little bit in the fact that Kai loved board sports and is sort of an individual sport. So it wasn't a team sport. He did play basketball when he was younger, but that wasn't something he wanted to continue. But when it came to board sports, the entire community was so supportive, and the trainers and coaches were always willing to accommodate what he needed. At one of the competitions he went to, he wore a jersey. So some of the accommodations we made is he would wear a jersey that said blind athlete on it. So that way the other kids would see him and know, and it was a bright yellow jersey. And so like during the timed competitions, they would have like 3 minutes to catch waves. a pro would go down to the beach with him and would call out the waves so that he, you know, normally it would take him a lot longer to catch waves if he's relying on himself, but the pro would call it out for him. So he's always just been embraced by the board sports community.
Well, that's great. That's great that he didn't have a lot of challenges to allow him to do that. But I would think if a parent did face challenges, that it would be similar to the academic challenges, that you just need to be the advocate.
That's right. And like understanding what your child would need to be successful is really important to be able to communicate. A lot of times people are more than willing if they understand exactly what it is that you're asking for. You know, they, like me in the beginning, they might have never met a blind child and they might, you know, have an instant reaction. Like, there's no way we could do that. It wouldn't be safe. But a lot of times if you approach them and say, you know, this is my child, he's very interested in this, he's, you know, very outgoing, he's a fast learner, we are willing to take the risk, we're willing to sign waivers, we, you know, we're willing to do anything that you think needs to be done to make this safe for him, whether it's like pads, helmets, things like that. A lot of times, at least in our experience and other families I've met, the more we can educate on the front end, the easier it is for people to sort of meet us halfway.
Well, and often if an individual has had good training, it's not always obvious immediately that they have vision loss. And so people might not realize that they need some accommodation or
yes, that anything's so different. True. That's so true. And that's something else I would add with regard to sports and schooling. You know, anytime you can involve your child in those conversations so that they can hear you talking about what they need and, you know, how it could work, it teaches them so that then when they're in a situation, they know, like, these are the things I could say. These are the things that they might want to know on the front end. So Kai always attended all of his IEP meetings. At some point, he started taking over his IEP meetings, and I was just there as his backup. So the more we can include our children, the more self-confidence they'll have. You know, we always taught Kai that his educational needs were not special. I'm not a fan of the term special education. You know, accessible education, inclusive education, that's covered by law. You know, it's his right to receive those services. So a lot of times I feel like in the term special education, parents and children sometimes feel like, oh, I'm asking them to do me a favor. You know, this is something special. And the reality is it's a right. It is Kai's right to have an accessible education. And he grew up knowing that and hearing that. And now that he's in college, he's a wonderful self-advocate.
I was gonna say, I'm sure all that involvement and teaching from you has really benefited him now that he's in college and off on his own and living on his own.
It has. And, you know, I wouldn't know any of this if it wasn't for the wonderful mentors that we were connected to in the early days. And he has one mentor in, you know, specifically who's just had such a huge impact on his life and my life. He's a blindness consultant, and he has just been so instrumental in teaching me and teaching Kai what needs to happen for him to succeed.
Well, Kim, parenting just can be hard and it can be tiring. And then when you add on needing to do additional advocacy for your child because of vision loss or some other condition, I could see where that could just add to that. And I'm sure you had days where you were just really tired and were not feeling like having to be that advocate. What helped you? What resources did you find helpful when you were struggling with parenting, but specifically dealing with some of the things you needed to do for Kai to help him have great opportunities in his life?
I wish I really had some wisdom there, but I will tell you, I'm still recovering. Kai calls me a recovering advocate because it was just really hard. And a lot of times it was pushing beyond my own comfort zone and my own energy level. But, you know, he was my child and I wanted the best for him. And to make things more complicated, I'm disabled. I have 3 autoimmune diseases. So I am exhausted on a good day. And then to add all of that on top of it, it was a lot. So I think what got me through was I had really good relationships with his teacher, the visually impaired, his orientation and mobility specialist, and Joe and some other mentors who helped us along the way. And Joe also taught me something that really helped me was, you know, I can't fix everything for everybody. You know, sometimes you feel so strongly and you're like, this has to happen. But the reality is I just needed to focus on what Kai needed right then and take it one step at a time and choose my battles. For me, it was super important that he be a Braille reader and that he be an independent traveler. So that's what I focused on the most. And believe me, it wasn't easy. Our school district didn't want to pay for anything and the administrators were not supportive, but thankfully he had a really good TBI, good ONM, and he had me. I wasn't about to back down. And my husband worked for the school district, so he always felt like he couldn't be involved because we were worried about his job, you know, about things backfiring. So a lot of times I felt alone, but I did really have strong relationships with other parents of blind kids, and just having sounding boards and, you know, people to remind you what's important and what we can let go.
Well, I know on your website, navigatingblindness.com, there's a tab that says book, and you talk a little bit about a book you're writing. Able to talk about that a bit?
I can, yeah. So when Kai went to college, I was so lost. I didn't know what to do with myself. I had been fighting for 10 years for his education, and I just started sitting down and sort of reviewing back through all of my notes and all of our IEP meetings and all of the blogs I had written. And I thought, you know, I really want to write a book. And I had no idea how to write a book. So I just started writing. And once I got through the first draft, I got in touch with an editor and worked with her for the next year. And I just got signed by an agent. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. So the book is going out on submission and, at the end of this month, and I'm hoping to find a really good publishing partner. But the book is really just our journey from the day of diagnosis till Kai's transition to college. And he actually writes the final chapter as an adult attending college and living independently. And the book's organized into sections about acceptance, building a community, and an equal education. So it's a memoir, but it also has a lot of tips and tricks that I learned throughout the years.
Right. Well, I know on your site, it says it's the book that you wished you had when you started your journey.
Yes.
You had that reference. So that's great. I'm sure that will be really helpful to folks. And I just want to be sure people know how to find you if they are looking for your blog or for any of the information or articles that you have.
Yeah, so I'm at navigatingblindness.com is my blog, but my social media is where I'm more active. Instagram, Kai and I run an Instagram together called Navigating Blindness, and we feature you know, stories about him, but also stories about a lot of other families that are navigating blindness and the education system. And then we also have a Facebook page, Navigating Blindness. So that's the best way to reach us.
Great. Well, and there's so much information on there. I mean, certainly about the education system, but even other things, like I know currently we've seen a lot of this as well with Uber and Lyft and individuals who have guide dogs being declined rides all of a sudden. So a lot of those issues you guys address. So it's really helpful.
Yeah, that was not something we expected to run into, really. When he moved to college, he got his guide dog after his freshman year. And we really had no idea that he would have so many access issues with rideshare. It's really been a problem. And so we are trying to raise awareness around that.
Well, I know we've seen that with the individuals that we serve in the community here in Colorado as well. That's been a big issue. So thank you for making that known and working on that issue as well. I think that's something of concern across the country. Kim, what would you like parents to take away from our conversation today as they move forward?
I would say that as a parent, I often felt alone, and it's super important to remember that we are not alone. Building a community is really key, having people to reach out to learn from, is just so important. Just to remember you're not alone, and that if you're feeling that way, to reach out to somebody in the community to talk to.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us today. I know that this will have been really encouraging for a lot of parents who are trying to help their children to really have full lives at whatever age, whether they're still in elementary school or if they've taken off for college this fall. So thanks so much.
Thank you.